MK Podcast.
Tony.
Nope, that's the wrong button. On the wrong page. It's been a minute.
Honestly, you should have just hit that. I mean.
I had to get the rimshot gunshot in.
Calvin's legendary friend Hobbs. The fact that all he let play was Tony is so funny.
God. Yeah, that's getting edited out.
No, it's not. Why? It's so funny.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll leave it in. Who cares? Nobody cares.
Oh, that was awesome. And it got us out of that fucking tailspin we were in.
Yeah, anyway. That might just be the beginning of the episode now. I might cut all the other shit out before that and just
anyways,
start it there.
Somebody please think about The Rock's career for the love of God.
Yeah, the man needs help, clearly.
Somebody finally get The Rock paid. We know he needs it.
I was having dinner with my friend Carissa last night, and she was talking about... She was
explains it all.
She was talking about the Jungle Cruise movie. She was at her brother's house, and her brother just had it on in the background. And I had this realization. I said, you know how to get me to like not be excited to see your movie? Just put The Rock in it.
Yeah?
Yeah. He doesn't sell tickets to me.
What's the last movie I saw with The Rock in it, I wonder? I genuinely don't know.
Like, I haven't seen any of these new Jumanjis. I feel like there's 12 of them.
Oh, actually, I saw those. I have seen those. So you answered my question for me. They're not terrible by any stretch. They're fine.
I think the last movie with The Rock in it that I saw that wasn't a Fast and Furious movie was Faster.
What is that?
I don't even remember. It's some kind of like a revenge flick where he... like was imprisoned like for a crime he didn't
where he
commit.
Doesn't eat for the whole movie,
so he yeah, so he gets out of prison and he's getting revenge on whoever framed him. I don't even remember, but I just like near the beginning of the movie there's a scene like he's getting out of prison and the prison is in the middle of nowhere, right? And he just like sort of gets let out of the gates and it's just like this desert basically.
That's just Dread. That's where you get sent in Dread. You go to hell
with one road, and he just sort of walks out onto the road and then just starts running for God knows how many miles. No one was there to pick him up. He didn't have a ride. He's just like, I'm running.
That's my favorite sequence in the Cormac McCarthy book is when Dwayne Johnson just starts running.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's the last movie with The Rock in it that I like saw.
While we're
that
being...
That wasn't a Fast and Furious movie, but also might as well have been because I think there were a lot of cars in it too.
While we're being... the boring kind of podcasters that just say things they don't like, aka The Rock is your marquee selling point for your movie and basically nothing else. Can I make a complaint? Can I lodge a complaint?
100%.
I've been over Ryan Reynolds, dude. Can we take a fucking break?
Yeah, please. Please.
For his sake, too. Like, I am as interested in Ryan Reynolds not having to do this anymore as I am in being free from Ryan Reynolds. Let that dude go, keep making commercials for his fucking gin company
and
just
company.
Like rake it in. We don't need to keep doing this, and we don't need to cast him in everything that's ever been made. We can just all take a break.
Yeah, and honestly, like, nothing against the guy. He's fine.
He's an extremely nice guy in the city that I live. He did a COVID vaccine promotional video for our public health unit pretending to be an intern. Yeah. He's great. Sweetheart, no doubt. But, like, take a vacation.
We're going to ruin him. We as a society are putting way too much pressure on him, just as a whole.
Yeah, just let that dude go fucking take a vacation, like a safe vacation.
We need to dial it back. He doesn't need to be Johnny Cage in the movie. Let's give that a rest.
And we brought it back. You know whose career we do need to save?
Casper Van Dien's.
I was going to say Mortal Kombat Legacy's Johnny Cage.
That guy's pretty good. We're going to get into it.
No, I like the character. The whole episode's about him having a bad time pitching a show.
Oh, I get it.
It's just like in the show.
Holy shit. Sorry, we got just a little... We flew way too close to the meta sun right there.
Does Mark Zuckerberg own that? Okay, I'm going to stop with all these jokes.
Corey.
Yeah. Neil, yes.
Time,
hi.
Time to talk about Mortal Kombat Legacy.
It is. Sorry, I was taking a drink right as you asked me that, so I was like, oh, I need to answer and participate in this show that we do. But yeah. What is Mortal Kombat's legacy? I guess we'll find out.
We will find out. That's what we're here to figure out. So this episode, we are going to talk about Mortal Kombat Legacy Season 1, Episodes 1 through 3. So that's the Jax, Sonya, and Kano two-parter and the Johnny Cage standalone episode. Let's talk about the Jax, Sonya, and Kano one first.
Oh, we're in it? We're here? I guess we did kind of set up what this is already.
Let's just get right into it. Do you want to go over to the Corey Corner? You can give us a rundown of this. What do you think this was watchable? And like, you cut out the previously on minute. You cut out like the 2 minutes of credits.
Oh my god! It's like the length of a Defenders of the Realm.
It's like 18 minutes total. The two
probably something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go over to the Corey Corner.
Welcome to the Corey Corner.
Yeah, so let's start with where the show starts, which I guess would be apt. Jax, Sonya, Kano, part one. Like all good TV shows, it starts in a place that sort of looks like airport security. You've got a bunch of bins full of electronics just sort of rolling around in this warehouse. Big, big room. And we are in a place that is, you know, people are welding and people are building stuff. And you're like, what's up with that? And then a man arrives who looks enough like Kano without the laser eye that you can assume it's him. And then he starts talking in an Australian accent, and you really do know that it's him. And we get introduced to an eyeball-shaped directed energy weapon from a very nervous employee. And
we call it, it's called Chekhov's eye laser.
Chekhov's eye laser. If you're going to put one on the mantle in Act 1, you have to insert it into somebody's skull by the 12-minute mark.
100%.
That's what that means.
It's classic and, theater rules.
And so, yep, that's how Shakespeare did it, and that's how we do it to this day in his honor.
That's where Chekhov got that whole gun idea from.
Yeah, Shakespeare actually invented guns for Romeo and Juliet. That's why there's so many in the Baz Luhrmann movie. A lot of people don't know that, but it's true. Look it up. And then 7 of 9 is there.
Yeah, she is.
And she has this terrible, terrible heads-up display. That is the wackest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Sorry, you said 7 of 9. I think that you mean newscaster Valerie Sharp from Dracula 2000. Go on.
I think, just for clarity's sake, it is Sonya Blade.
Yes.
And she's there like, Kano is working on something called the Cyber Initiative. And then we all clap like Mortal Kombat fans and go, I know what that is.
Yeah, we do. You better believe I did.
And that leads me to believe this show is set in some kind of near future where this technology is possible, because she has a big, funny Google Glass heads-up display. And then they go to the police precinct, and you've got Jax and Stryker as the bosses here, taking on the Black Dragon crime cartel because they have stolen pieces of the Department of Defense's robotic weapons program.
Yeah.
Then we get through some like secret, corny, typical like cop shop dialogue. Like, Jax, come on, we can't just go in there, guns akimbo, shooting up the place. Like,
starring Daniel Radcliffe.
Kimbo slays with two guns, holding the two akimbo guns akimbo. We can't do that. That's simply too much. And then Jax goes, "What if I fucking did it anyway?" And then Stryker's like, fucking hell yeah, dude. And then they just go. So they're like, we're going to go get Kano, and we're going to go rescue Sonya. And there's going to be a bunch of lens flares, and it's going to be really cool. And Sonya gets captured with ease by Kano and his goons. And she's all shackled up in some like dank warehouse basement. And Kano walks in talking like Matt Berry, which honestly kind of took me out of it a little bit. Sounds like he's telling a funny joke. And, you know, we have the classic, yeah, I killed your partner. I'm going to ruin your day. Jackson, all those boys are coming. We're going to kill those guys. Yeah. Ha ha ha. I'm evil. And so the police arrive, and there's a big gunfight between the police and the bad guys, who are all wearing protective glasses like you would wear to make sure that you don't get rocks in your eyes while whippersnipping your lawn.
I mean, they are factory workers also.
Yeah, those are very much like eye protection first and like bad guy accoutrement second.
Black Dragon takes OSHA very seriously.
Yeah, yeah. Kano actually went to prison for the first time for OSHA violations and not any of the other crime that he does. And then there's some martial arts. There's some gunfighting. There's some, unfortunately, no gun kata.
No gun kata in this.
Which is, I'm going to be honest with you, a little surprising because it also has that, like, in the precinct, it does sort of have that, like, Matrix-esque sickly green color grading. So I was like, hey, we could do some gun kata in here. Whatever. I've seen okay, Equilibrium.
Have you seen Equilibrium?
No.
Since we talked about it?
No. But maybe the creator of Mortal Kombat Legacy saw it. Anyway, I'm getting a little sidetracked. So they keep fighting. Sonya escapes. Jax and Kano are fighting. A big bomb goes off and they keep fighting. Then there's a 45-minute long previously on segment for the episode that we just saw in Jax, Sonya, Kano Part 2. And the boys keep fighting in slow motion, mostly. Mm-hmm. And Kano talks a bunch of shit and then immediately gets dumpstered and punched in the face so hard that his eyeball literally flies out of his head.
Yeah, it does.
And that sets that up. And then there's another explosion. Sonya and Jax escape with their lives. They're worried about the safety of Jax's arms. And we mm-hmm. see Kano get that laser eye that Chekhov set up implanted into his face.
Yeah.
Scene.
One important thing I just want to add in here.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see Sonya in the factory and she's sending a message to Jackson Stryker.
Oh, may I? I think I know where you're going. I forgot
yes,
this
please.
Detail. So the reason the police have been so thoroughly baited here in a very Kung Lao-esque fashion is that Kano conveniently intercepted that transmission and sent it like 2 days later.
Yeah. After the shipment went
out. I guess so they had time to prep.
Yeah, he was able to get that robot weapon shipment out before the police showed
right.
up. So his plan was to just have him walk into a death trap.
God, I watched a movie last night that it also involved a gun shipment, and my brain was getting kind of like confused between the two weapons shipments.
That's understandable. This just certainly has a lot of similarities to the Yakuza.
Yeah, 100%.
A movie I have not seen. Just to
basically the same thing.
I just know what movie you watched last night.
You do happen to know that I did watch the Yakuza last night.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that is what happens in Jax, Sonya, and Kano parts 1 and 2. Do you want to go over to the Neil Nook?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Neil Nook.
It's Gucci.
A little bit of trivia first. This episode... In 1 week after this episode got released on YouTube, how many views do you think this got?
Oh, man, I don't know, because I didn't watch it on YouTube, so I don't even know how many it has now. I don't even know how to frame this.
1 week, it got 5.5 million views.
Okay.
Which feels like, I mean, that was more numbers than Rebirth got. I don't know how to quantify that in terms of, like, viral YouTube web series.
That must have been a lot at the time.
And like, honestly, that's got to be more than the Office ladies get now, right?
Oh my god. We can't
like
keep doing this.
Why not? I'm just trying to get them to notice us.
This is not the way to do that. I don't think.
I think they're fine with it.
They don't know what's happening.
They're very successful. It's fine. All right, so this was directed by, I'm going to go ahead and say, Kevin T.
You've just given up on saying his name?
Well, I just want to be very clear. I was, you know, I'm notorious for fucking up people's names and sounding like an idiot and being apologetic for it.
This guy must have been interviewed somewhere. I feel like we could have mitigated our embarrassment here by just looking it up.
Oh, I did. I did before that last episode, Corey. I looked it up. And in an interview, he's introduced as Kevin Tancharoen. So that's the pronunciation I tried to go with throughout the episode. I definitely like mixed up syllables a couple of times listening back to it. I think even the time where I was like, yeah, I fucking nailed that pronunciation, I think I'd fucked it up. But yeah, Kevin Tancharoen is the information that I'm operating under. But I got a voice message from a different Kevin, not Kevin Tancharoen, but friend of the show Kevin.
Okay.
And he's got a different take on it. So I'm going to go ahead and play that.
He has a different take on how to pronounce the name?
Yes.
Tancheron. It's Tancheron, not Tancheroan, not Tancheron. Tancheron. Get it right. Jesus.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Sorry, Kevin, first of all, because you sound very upset.
Kevin's a friend. It's fine. I want everyone to know out there that Kevin's a friend. He's not being a dick. He's being a dick in a friendly way.
I like how you still decided to frame it as he has a different interpretation when it clearly sounds like he's just saying it correctly.
Saying Tancheron, but the interviewer said Tancheroan. Unless somebody else out there can weigh in on this controversy.
Well, what I can tell you is that as somebody who has interviewed people before, I've definitely said people's names wrong by accident. By failing to do the best practice of asking them to say it directly to me. So
I'm going to say Kevin T for now. And if anybody else has more concrete information, because I got two sources here. One of them actually talked to the guy, and the other one is my friend Kevin.
So. I guess we just have to make your friend Kevin into the Kevin that we need to get the name right with.
I guess he's got the same first name. He's probably an expert on all Kevins. Because they're both named Kevin.
Right, yeah. I get it, yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to... Okay.
Yeah, I get it. I just didn't want to acknowledge it.
And scene.
What's up, mortals? Neil here to interrupt this podcast with an important news update. Communication with friend of the show, Kevin, has continued. Kevin seems to have done a little research, and he just got back to me with the following message.
Like I said, it's fucking Tancheroan. I don't know how this is so fucking complicated. Oh my God. Tancheroan. Tancheroan.
Well, there you have it. I guess this issue is now settled. Thank you, Kevin, for reaching out again and owning your mistakes so that I can publicly humiliate you on my podcast. Now, back to the show.
Anyway, this was directed by Kevin T, same guy who did Rebirth, of course. Written by Todd and Aaron Helbing. The brothers Helbing are writers and producers on shows like The Flash, Superman and Lois, Black Sails, and Spartacus. They're dudes who do stuff, right?
Yeah, they sound extremely successful. All of those shows are things I've at least heard of.
Yeah. Another bit of trivia for you, Corey. This season of Legacy was filmed all in Vancouver. It's a Canadian
production. Don't worry. There was something that tipped my hand.
Oh, was there? Okay. There are a lot of Canadian, like, there's a lot of Canadian actors in this from
there popular sure
Canadian
is.
Series. We've got Michael Jai White back as Jax, Jeri Ryan back as Sonya Blade, Darren Shalavi as Kano. Darren passed away in 2015, which is very sad.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, he was in a bunch of, like, UA Bowl films.
Oh, okay.
Blood Rain, Alone in the Dark, In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale, etc. He was also in Ip Man 2, the Donnie Yen movie. That's very good. Mm-hmm. I think the first one's better. But and he was in Kickboxer Vengeance.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of Canadians, we've got Tam O'Pennicott as Curtis Stryker. I don't know if he's Canadian, but he was Captain Carl Agathon on Battlestar Galactica, a very Canadian show.
Is it? I've never seen it. So yeah, you, the problem is I'm Canadian, but you're making jokes about Canada that I don't even understand.
Oh, it was just famous for being like filmed in Vancouver. So there's a lot of...
My favorite movie filmed in Vancouver is Rumble in the Bronx.
Hell yeah.
Which just has giant fucking mountains in the background that nobody seems to question at any point.
Rumble in the Bronx is very good.
Sorry?
You know what pisses me off about Rumble in the Bronx?
What?
That kid. The kid in the wheelchair. He's got a Game Gear the entire time, a Sega Game Gear, and he's always playing it, but there's never a game inserted into it. It's bullshit.
I thought you were going to say the batteries seemed like they were lasting too long.
Also, I don't think he couldn't realistically get that far. He just turned it on and just be like a white screen, because there's no game in that thing.
PS3 has no games.
What do you do in movies in 1993?
I don't know what year Rumble in the Bronx came out.
Let's find out. This is important. 1995, my bad. And let's move on. Tam O'Pennicott is also Agent Paul Ballard on Joss Whedon's Dollhouse, which is a show I don't know if I like or not.
But that's maybe the worst series of three words I've ever heard.
I do know that I don't like Joss Whedon. What did you think of this overall, this two-parter?
It's fine. I'm not crazy about it. Okay. It's just not what I want out of Mortal Kombat.
Sure.
I don't care about what the cops are doing, and I don't care about stealing weapons, and I don't care about gunfights, and I just don't care about any of this shit. Mm-hmm. And then there are some stylistic choices that I don't really love. The action is agonizingly slow. Not just in slow motion, but like even out of it, it's just stiff and kind of clunky, and I just wasn't
interesting
crazy about it. I was not a huge fan of this. I will say it does, I don't know what its budget was, but in terms of what I would have expected a web series to look like in whatever year this was, early 2010s, it looks better than I would have expected in terms of like production value. Like, it seems like the budget is higher than I would have expected, or it's just using that money really well. So like, credit to that.
2011 is when it was made.
Yeah. And I like the casting choices, but it does not coalesce into something that I liked very much.
Okay. That's fair. I think, I definitely liked it more than you did. I really like, I just kind of rewatched all of this stuff right before we started recording because, you know, I've had other shit going on. That's getting cut out. Don't worry. Nah, fuck it. I'm leaving it in. I've been dealing with some shit.
Yeah.
So I didn't get around to watching it until today. I feel different. I like it more than I thought I did, honestly.
Okay.
And that's just a statement on this intro thing, like this first two-parter, not on the whole series. I think there's a lot in the series that I really like, but like you, I was really kind of like, man, I don't care about the cops. It doesn't matter to me that they made Jax and Sonya just Deacon City police officers instead of special forces or military members or whatever.
Yeah, that doesn't matter to me at all.
It's no fucking difference, honestly, when you're dealing with this kind of stuff. But I found myself being like kind of into... So you know how when we talked about Mortal Kombat Conquest, certain episodes we would just have to chalk things up to being a product of their time?
Right.
Yeah, this is a product of its time in a different way. Like, the way the action scenes were shot and the slow motion use and all of that kind of stuff.
And the color grading, oh my God.
The color grading, particularly, that is extremely 2010s. Like, extremely early 2010s, for sure. That's like the 2000, when did Live Free or Die? It's like started at Live Free or Die Hard, or maybe Underworld, and then it ended right before The Raid came out. It's like that era of action movie styling, right?
Right.
So we have to keep that in consideration, because I think it's really impressive that they made this web series kind of look like a high budget, or I mean, you can still see the seams, right? Like, it's not like, you know, the special effects, the fire.
Digital blood was
a
choice,
yeah,
that they didn't have to make, but it was very much a thing at the time.
It enabled them to make this thing on a pretty low budget, I think, and I think it's pretty successful overall. They worked in a lot of fighting, like hand to hand, like particularly Jax against Kano, and I do think that fight was pretty well choreographed and felt modern Mortal Kombat to me. Right.
I will say that's where I'm at a bit of a deficit, because I don't really play the video games a lot.
Sure.
And I haven't played. I don't think I've played the newest Mortal Kombat game ever, and I played X very little. But I did own 9, so like, can't necessarily speak to that. I like that Jax is a big man that's got kicks.
Yeah, he is.
I'm all about that. Something what bothered me about it, and this is less a detriment to its choreography, rather its presentation, is just like, A, the slow motion is horrible. I hate it. It's not bringing impact to any of the hits, and it's just sort of dragging out the process. And I personally found that there was something about the fighting itself that I couldn't really put my finger on, but that just felt kind of, maybe clunky was a bad word that I used earlier, but maybe more accurately I would describe it as like heavy.
Yeah. Well, I think that they were really trying to show Jax being like a brute, like a heavy hitter.
Yeah, but just in making that choice and also occasionally slowing it down, like the choreography felt like it came in chunks and not like a fluid thing.
Okay.
And I don't know, just something about it as I was watching it, like the choreography is perfectly competent, but something about it, it just didn't click with me. There was, I don't know, I wanted it to be different than it was.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, they kept cutting away to like gunfight scenes. And
yeah.
I was just like, ugh. Like I didn't need any of it.
And yeah, and Sonya's not doing like anything, and then just suddenly kind of is by the end of the second one, and it's like, okay, so like.
Well, I kind of like that scene when Jax and Kano were fighting, and Kano grabs like that explosive charge gun that they've been using to like blow up all the cops. And they shoot the charge on the ground, and then they both just have to like dive out of the way before it explodes. And that explosion is the thing that ended up like loosening Sonya's like restraints, so she was able to yank the bolt out of the ceiling and get free.
Right. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool and creative. And then when she does enter the battlefield, once she's gotten herself like out of her restraints and everything, we do get to see her kick some ass. You know, because she's like coming in behind all the Black Dragon guys and just starts like taking them down.
Conveniently, there's a girl there for her to punch first. Ugh.
Well, you know.
I don't know. That just felt kind of like, oh, okay. That's the first other woman we've seen in this whole thing. And it's just in time for the woman protagonist to get to punch somebody.
Sure. But hey, what are you going to do? I do think that the casting across the board, I think that she plays a good Sonya, honestly, Jeri Ryan. I think that Michael Chai White's great as Jax. I think the guy who plays Kano is good. And I think Tam O'Pennicott is the least frustrating choice for Stryker because he's not trying to make Stryker cool.
Well, yeah, they've also made Stryker like a fucking human being person.
Yeah.
And not like a fucking hyper aggro cop SWAT nightmare.
Right. He's not in like a backwards cap and like a bike shirt, you know, trying to like fuck up people.
Yeah.
I think the casting choices were good, and I think the characterizations of them overall were good. I mean, yeah, a 12-minute gunfight's not the thing I'm going to... Like, they did that. They tried that with that Clive Owen shoot-'em-up movie. You know, just like one gigantic gunfight of a movie.
Just go watch Heat.
Well, that's a good one, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you want a movie with a good big gunfight in it, just go watch... I don't know. Don't watch this. This is not what I'm here for this.
The slow motion. Also, the slow motion didn't work for me.
It's so weird how when Sonya walks out of being like captured, it's this big slow-mo lens flare, emotional music swelling moment. And it's like, we've been in this show for 10 minutes. Like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, but for some of us, Sonya's been there our whole lives, man.
I guess. I don't know. It felt just weirdly unearned and like needlessly huge. I don't know.
Sure. So J.J. Abrams' Star Trek came out in 2009, and that was like the lens flare apocalypse.
Finally, we can blame J.J. Abrams for something else.
We blamed Christopher Nolan for Rebirth. We can blame J.J. Abrams for
the lens flare count is
one and two.
It's on the charts, but it's charting pretty high.
Some of the other stuff, like I did like this cyber initiative seed, the idea that this cyber initiative is like being, you know,
that it was the Department of Defense's fault.
It's been stolen from the Department of Defense. It kind of gives an excuse for this technology to exist in the real world. It's these top secret experimental projects, et cetera, right? But I also like the implication here. And spoiler alert for the end of the series, it's going to pay off because there is an episode of this series called Cyrax and Sector. So we know that the cyber initiative is going to be a real thing, right? I just like that as a Mortal Kombat tease. I liked the opening shot basically being like a cyber head,
right?
Like a helmet. And I thought, oh, that could be, maybe that's a reference to Cabal, because didn't they use like Black Dragon tech, at least in the reboot, they used Black Dragon tech to like resuscitate him. I don't know. I just thought that was like, again, Mortal Kombat fan, clap like an idiot when the Mortal Kombat thing shows up on screen, you know?
They said fatality and I clapped.
And I did think that there were some good, like, excess slow motion and lens flares aside, there was some good, like, the part in the fight where Jax, like, knocks Kano's eye out, like, that part, like, it felt like, it reminded me of, like, the Black Dragon Fight Club stage from Mortal Kombat 11. Not that it was, like, full of people, but just, like, the aesthetic a little bit of this factory setting. And then, like, the slowdown from that felt like a reference to, like, an X-ray move or, you know, something from the modern games, and then the blood splattering across the lens of the camera and everything.
I did not like that.
That's fine. And I'm not saying I'm not here to judge if it's good or bad either, but it did feel like modern Mortal Kombat. Like, I think this is the first thing, and we've had stuff that came out after this, right? Like, we watched the Legends movies and we watched Mortal Kombat 2021. So far of the more modern stuff, this is, like, on track to, like, be representing it the most to me,
well,
in a way that doesn't feel like pandering.
Yeah, this definitely feels the least like pandering, but in being the least like pandering, it's also the furthest from the soul of the thing. So you're going to get it's a sword that cuts both ways, because it's both the least pandering and potentially more alienating, because it's got that much of a remove, at least at this opening bit, from what it being Mortal Kombat typically looks and feels like. I will say, though, that you can see in the newer movies since this carrying over certain elements that you do see here that also reflect the newer games, like slowing certain moves and really accentuating the brutality of it. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. So far, I'm thinking that this did a better job, honestly. But again, this opening is not, I mean, I think it's fine. I think it's pretty good. I understand your issues with it, and I think that those are totally fair. This is not my favorite part of Legacy. And I honestly think if they had started at any different point and then this had come in later, it would have, like, this still would have felt really disjointed, because we're going to go to different and more interesting places with Legacy than this story about cops invading the Black Dragon factory. There's going to be better stuff, better and more interesting stuff. So I think that starting with this kind of makes you feel like, oh, is this how it's all going to be? It's not how it's all going to be.
Yeah. If this were how it's all going to be, I am comfortable enough saying now that, like, it would be an overall thumbs down from me. I can just feel that from this taster.
Right.
If it were to continue on this exact bent, I can take it in a smaller dose like this to an extent.
I think I got more to say about this after we get to the next thing we're going to talk about. Do you have anything else you want to say about Jax, Sonya, and Kano?
No, I'm good.
Or do you want to move on to the Johnny Cage episode?
Sure.
Guess what, mortals? You're getting two Corey Corners and two Neil Nooks in every episode for a while.
Oops,
all parts of room.
Shit, I was gonna say all crannies, like corners and nooks and that's not the word that I wanted, is it?
Yeah, we'll leave it in.
Oops, all crannies.
You want to go to the second Corey Corner?
For our man John Carlton.
I had to speed him up because we gotta get
gotta get this out of the way. This episode of Mortal Kombat Legacy starts with an episode of The Electric Playground,
which I don't know what that is, but you lost your mind.
Which, dear listener, shattered my brain into untold billions of pieces. The Electric Playground started off as a website but became a TV show in 1997 hosted by Victor Lucas that is based in Canada. I watched it on G4 Canada growing up, and it is like a video game and tech and like movies, and increasingly I think it's now just more like pop culture-y weekly rundown show that had a sister show that was spun off of it called Reviews on the Run, which was Victor Lucas and a suite of co-hosts, but it's like glory day era was Victor Lucas and Tommy Tallarico.
Okay. Everybody's favorite
characters. Guy Tommy Tallarico, who definitely is not up to any weird shit at all right now. but yeah, so Victor Lucas as a figure and the Electric Playground and Reviews on the Run as shows were absolutely instrumental in my childhood interest in video games flourishing.
Wow.
Watching those reviews on TV and watching those segments and seeing things from conventions and stuff about movies and things about games and getting that perspective readily available on that channel. Cause I was watching, like, because it's G4 Canada, it did eventually air on G4 in the US briefly as well. But like, so G4 Canada, it's like what I was essentially watching the most of was like Electric Playground Reviews on the Run. And then I was watching like X Play and Attack of the Show.
Okay.
And that was like, that was kind of my suite of like video game related television. Nice. And I caught the tail end of Cheaters before it all just became Cops reruns. But it's funny that this is coming up with G4 relaunching right now.
So many things just became Cop reruns after a while, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I will say the Electric Playground is ongoing on YouTube now. It's called EP Daily. That's the Daily Show version of it, because at a certain point it was pivoted over to that. But I actually took a look before we started. It looks more like what kind of you'd more see on a YouTube show. Like, it's not on the old set, at least not the video that I watched that you see in the Mortal Kombat Legacy thing. Like, that was a fixture of the set for Electric Playground. And it's more like in a room with a lot of like pop culture accoutrement, kind of like what you would see on YouTube more now. Okay. But people who have previously worked on EP Interviews on the Run, by the way, include fucking Jeff Keighley, who has gone on to take over the video game industry.
Okay.
He was a co-host, and now we can blame him for the video game awards.
I
won't get into a bunch of name dropping, but I cannot.
You know what? I want you to name drop some people. I want to see if I've heard of any of them.
Do you know who Jose Sanchez is?
No.
Okay. Well, so you do know who Tommy Tallarico is, obviously.
No, I was kidding.
You don't know who that is?
Nope.
Oh, so he was a video game composer. He created Video Games Live, like the concert series.
Oh, okay.
And now he bought Intellivision, and he's trying to relaunch the Intellivision, and that's really weird.
He's the guy.
And he's being really fucking weird about it, and his vibes are way off. And there's some weird shit going on with that.
You can only get an Intellivision now as an NFT.
Allegedly. but he did all kinds of video game scores and music, and then was a fixture on Reviews on the Run and some EP stuff. Like, you can watch old Electric Playground coverage at conventions and stuff where he's hosting it and things like that. So that's who Tommy Tallarico is. Jose Sanchez, I think, actually still works on EP. I don't totally know what he does now. Jeff Keighley, obviously, he worked at...
Oh.
What?
Tommy Tallarico, famous for making the Jeep Jamboree Off-Road Adventure soundtrack in 1992.
But Jeff Keighley, obviously, worked at Game Trailers, did the Video Game Awards, or I guess it's the Game Awards is actually what they're called.
Sure.
You know what those are. Everybody listening probably knows what those are. Marissa Roberto was on that show. I don't actually know what she does now, but she was great. There are a few people from Reviews on the Run that I remember more, and I can't remember their names, but I know if I saw them, I would definitely know. I'm also looking at Wikipedia. This says Evangeline Lilly was on Electric Playground at one point. That seems insane.
Maybe just as a guest, maybe.
Former cast, crew, and correspondents is what she's listed under. That doesn't seem right.
Well, the show started pretty early. You know, Evangeline Lilly was also an extra in Freddy vs. Jason.
Well, there you go. But,
Maybe it was around that time.
Yeah.
Another Vancouver production.
I mean, there are a lot of names I could just sit here and list. I know you said you wanted me to. I'll leave that for people to discover on their own.
I think we've made it clear to the internet that I have no idea who any of these people are.
Yeah. So this is like, for me, this was like a Canadian staple. Oh, I have to shout out the main man, actually.
Oh, you have to.
I almost forgot. Actually, people might know who Jeff Cannata is. He was on Reviews on the Run.
Nope.
Briefly. He does a podcast now with Anthony Carboni.
Okay.
So And but also Mark Saltzman. If you live in Canada, you definitely know who Mark Saltzman is, because if you go to Cineplex, you will see fucking tech reviews from that guy before movies play. He was on Electric Playground in Reviews on the Run. And Scott Jones was on Electric Playground in Reviews on the Run. He was sort of like the Tommy Tallarico replacement. But yeah,
I think we're good. I think we can move on from this.
No, I know, but like, I'm getting more into it. I haven't thought about this shit in a long time.
Wow.
Notably, actually, can I say one more thing about Reviews on the Run?
100%.
They were really smart because they gave both Burnout 3 Takedown and Burnout Revenge perfect scores.
Okay. No, nobody can argue with those scores.
Extremely based. Nobody can argue with those scores.
Absolutely not. I played zero of the Burnout game.
Are you fucking serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
Dude, what are you doing?
I don't know, man.
You gotta play Burnout 3, dude.
It's playing like Shenmue and stuff.
You're really gonna like the music in Burnout 3.
It's playing Skies of Arcadia on my Dreamcast is what I was doing.
You have to play Burnout 3.
I'll play Burnout 3.
Good. I grew up playing that fucking game, dude. I love that game.
That means I was in college when that happened.
Yeah, so. You probably would have. And its reviews were bulletproof, so where were you?
Doing college stuff.
Figure it out. I played a lot of video games in university.
That's fair. Whatever. I just couldn't afford any in university.
Steal it from the store.
Was not a university.
Anyway, that was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. Victor Lucas is doing a segment on the Electric Playground about John Carlton's failing career as Johnny Cage, starting from being the paragon of masculinity and a martial arts genius and big star,
yes,
apparently from Power Rangers, according to Ed Boon. And
from Power Rangers.
They have footage of this teenager at like karate tournaments and shit, and it's this TV...
Probably actual footage of Matt Mullins.
It's this TV profile of like the rise and fall of his career as presented by Victor Lucas on the Electric Playground, which is the wildest thing that has maybe ever happened to me in my life. I want to reiterate that. They describe him as the paragon of masculinity, but then they have like inner cuts from like friends and coworkers, like, we couldn't help him anymore. He was going down a dark path. Then...
Which they never elaborate on.
And then cut to... the most confusing thing we probably saw in these two episodes, because it suddenly cuts to some Impact font and some wildly outdated dance music, and John Cage is chasing criminals and he does some bad martial arts, and
well,
what,
go on,
bad in the eyes of the executives that are about to come up in a moment.
There you go.
Well, come on. Let's get in media res a little bit.
Keep going.
And he fights a man carrying a bag full of pirated movies. And he looks at the camera and says, "You wouldn't download a car or whatever." And then this is him pitching a TV show where he's like a martial arts vigilante to TV executives as a PSA against piracy. And these weird executives do not like it. Quote, "I was literally getting more and more pissed the longer it went on." So they're not loving it. And then he's like, "I want to prove to everybody that all my fighting is real." And then they're like, "Audiences already think all the fighting you do in your movies is fake." And he says, "No shit, it's fake. It's a fucking movie."
Right.
Which is like, fair play. So
it's a really good point.
Cut to 3 weeks later, Impact font. And Johnny Cage is back, and now he's doing more of like a... You ever see The First 48 on A&E?
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's a show where people try to solve murders, which I personally don't totally love the idea of, because I feel like it's weirdly invasive. But I'm mentioning that because it's taking this pitch for a TV show takes on the stylings more of like a gritty, on the ground, like... cop work stopping crime thing at first.
Like cops.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
this is
like
just
all those
cops
reruns from G4.
This is to compete with Dog the Bounty Hunter. And
and Lawman, which I think was that Steven Seagal reality show.
I have no idea. He pretended to be a cop in a reality show?
Yeah.
What?
He was like an honorary deputy.
Was that before or after he moved to Russia?
Before, assuming, I assume.
Yeah, over there they're called cosmonauts. Deputies.
It's very good.
And anyway, just really quick, I want to get through this. So he sends his pitch, and then it sort of elevates the style a little bit. It has like a criminal's caged counter.
Yes, isn't that was so fucking
one of those big CCCs. And he starts kicking the shit out of people. And it's really awesome. And there's a bunch of sound effects and shit. And then the executives are like, we still hate it, actually. Action is dead. Your career is over. We're actually not even going to finish watching this. That's showbiz, baby. And then these television executives do the unthinkable, which is double cross washed out talent. How dare they? They go to whatever her name is, like Erica or something.
Her credit is Action Star.
They go to Action Gal, and they basically just do Johnny's pitch for a TV show, and they're like, action is so in right now, and we want you to do all this action stuff where you're like out on the streets, like solving criminals and stopping crime. Yeah. And Johnny is listening in because he didn't leave yet, and he's like, you motherfuckers just pitched this person my show, this gritty slice of life cop show. And then... Yeah. Johnny Cage proceeds to commit assault by kicking the absolute shit out of some television executives.
Hell yeah.
And then time stops and all the light gets sucked out of this TV set and Shang Tsung arrives in a suit like Nick Fury in the fucking Avengers. And then the episode ends.
That's it, man. That is the Johnny Cage.
I just entered
shot.
A fugue state. What the fuck was what just happened?
Real quick, Steven Seagal, Lawman. A reality series that follows action star Steven Seagal
as a fully commissioned
deputy with the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office in Louisiana.
God, that'll just make anybody a fucking cop.
Right?
Wow.
Real show. Real show.
Anyway, go watch old episodes of Reviews on the Run, maybe? I don't know. I was trying to find a way to tie that all back in. I don't really have one. I'm assuming that Victor Lucas has not done anything to skew my remembrance of him in a negative way. I know
certainly
Tommy Tallarico is a weird ass dude now, but
hopefully Victor Lucas didn't get Chris Hardwick.
I think he actually does some work at The Escapist now. So hopefully if he can be that mainstream in games media, hopefully it's fine.
Yeah. All right. You want to go over to the Fast Neil?
Oh, yeah. We're supposed to we're doing a show.
All right. Here we go. Okay, same gang of writers and directors as the last episode, and Matt Mullins is back from Mortal Kombat Rebirth as Johnny Cage. Victor Lucas plays himself.
He sure does.
Johnson Fan plays Shang Tsung. He did stunts in that new G.I. Joe Snake Eyes movie that I slept through half an hour of on an airplane recently.
Nice. Also, to be clear, it is in no way obvious that he is playing Shang Tsung.
Not yet. He pops up. He's going to pop up again.
Yeah, but I'm saying in what we've seen so far, if you're watching along, if you didn't know that was Shang Tsung, I get it because I didn't either.
You probably put it together when the credits rolled.
I didn't.
Johnson Fan has also done stunts on like Arrow, Lucifer, Altered Carbon, and the upcoming Sonic the Hedgehog 2 movie. Ed Boon makes a cameo as TV producer Ed Goodman.
I read it as good man because he has a kind heart, actually.
Ed Goodman. David Nicol plays one of the TV execs named Lance, the one who gets the shit beat out of him. He's been on like Stargate Atlantis, Arrow, and a TV show from like I think 1988 called Danger Bay. Which as soon as I saw that
sounds like, fucking awesome.
I gotta figure out what Danger Bay is.
Does that have anything to do with Old Bay?
It's nothing to do with Old Bay Spices. It is a TV series. Okay, 1984 to 1990. The adventures of a marine biologist and his family as they fight environmental crimes and other problems.
Can I tell you the funniest thing I've ever read on Google ever?
Yes.
If you Google Danger Bay, do you want to hear the entire description of the show?
Yeah, fuck it.
Adventures of Marine Veterinarian.
I mean, that's probably pretty accurate.
But like, if they're fighting the fucking, if they're fighting eco-terrorists, that seems like a big step up. They're fighting fucking Cloud Strife. Shinra has built a headquarters in Danger Bay. It's like the
what's that Advent Children disease everyone got? Geocaching or something?
What? Geocaching?
God damn it.
It's the sequel to The Raid on Bungling Bay. It's The Raid on Danger Bay.
I got to find out what this disease is called.
You don't. That's a horrible sentence to say.
Geostigma. That's what it is.
Geostigma? Isn't that thing that you used to be able to make websites with?
You're thinking of Angel Fire, which is a different disease.
No, I'm thinking of GeoCities.
I know.
Oh.
I know. I was taking your joke and making a different joke.
No, yeah, but like Angel Fire just sounds too much like a real Final Fantasy thing. Final Fantasy Radvent Children, am I right?
The other TV exec is played by Adrian Ho. Who? Adrian Who? God damn it. Kevin, how am I supposed to say this last name?
What's H-O-U-G-H. On second?
Huh. Adrian Huff.
Maybe Huff?
Huff. Adrian Huff as Emil. He voiced Nightcrawler on the X-Men animated series. He was in Underworld Evolution.
Is he going to get his role back in X-Men 97?
Fingers crossed. He plays Colin's dad in Jennifer's Body. Father Putnam in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and he was in two episodes of The Man in the High Castle, which of course stars both Bruce Locke and Cary Hiroyuki Tagawa, thus making it, as you once put it, the Shangulation. We've got Erica Serra as the action star. She was Trini's mom in like the latest Power Rangers movie. She was also on Battlestar Galactica. She's also credited as Goth Vixen Wannabe in Blade Trinity, starring Ryan Reynolds.
Speak of the devil. And yeah. He shows up about an hour late.
That's it for the Neil Nook. Corey, what did you think of this episode?
I liked this a lot more than the previous one.
This is really fucking fun, right?
This one is really fun. Tonally, it's so weird. Yeah. It's Johnny Cage arguing with TV executives who think he's worthless and trying to save his career with increasingly desperate pitches for crime-fighting martial arts shows.
It's a little too real at times, too, man. Like, honestly. Like, man.
Yeah. I don't actually have a lot to say about it, only because I think it just works really well.
It worked really well. It's a great way to, like, modernize the idea of, like, the faded action star. You know,
like how many action stars do you see like just get a weird TV show on like,
well, at least one Steven Seagal Lawman
on A&E.
Yeah,
but like
at least one.
This is a trajectory that exists and it's frustrating to watch because you can tell that he's like dedicated and interested in making this work and they don't care about him. They just want to like wring the last they can get out of him and then just discard him because they're over it.
Yeah,
because he hasn't been in anything since Power Rangers. Pretty cool that he was in Power Rangers.
But that Power Rangers comment was so cutting also.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah. These executives are real pieces of shit.
They are. And you see it. You see, like, I have nothing but respect for the actors from Power Rangers. But, like, yeah, it becomes, like, the convention circuit and the training course and opening the dojo and that kind of stuff. Like, that's the career trajectory for so many of them. But just to see, like, Johnny Cage get thrown into that and him clearly not wanting to be there. It just, that was another like statement on like the reality of what it's like growing up a Power Rangers martial arts star. It just felt way too true and believable, you know?
Yeah. And the pitches themselves are fucking hilarious.
I'm going to be real, dude. That second, like I was on board with the first one, the first cut of You Got Caged, but that second one with the fucking,
I'd fucking
the
watch that. The cage
in the corner. So fucking, I would watch every fucking episode of that show. I would be all in. I would buy a t-shirt, man.
And I think it's easier to take mkpodcast.com, and I think it's easier to take because you know it's kind of a bit, so it's like it's funnier to just be like, this man is just kicking the shit out of criminals, and I'm having the time of my life.
I think the writing on this was really clever. I think that it tapped into something, too. I don't know. I'm going to project something on here that I don't think is necessarily there, but like the... I feel like the studio execs, like, talking about Johnny's show is, like, his first pitch be like, this isn't exciting enough. This is too real. It's
it
boring.
Needs higher stakes. Nobody cares about DVDs.
It needs higher stakes. I feel like that was like a, I mean, obviously that's a, I think, a statement about the entertainment production world in general, but I'm wondering if Kevin T was like, oh yeah, they liked Rebirth, but they wanted me to make it more Mortal Kombat-y. Like, I wonder if it was like a subtle jab a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how much of that might have played out, but
that's me projecting entirely. I don't think that that's necessarily the case.
Our podcast producer said this show needed to be more real, so so Neil and I are gonna start just spiraling for a few months.
We're halfway through that journey already, man. Like, let's be
MK
real.
Podcast, the journey begins.
I do think that the again, I think Matt Mullins as Johnny Cage really, really sells it. Really, really sells, especially this version of Johnny Cage, because you can tell that he's still, you know, he's still young. He's not sort of like past his prime. It's almost like his prime got taken away from him like too soon a little bit.
Right.
You know, he's not like a, he's not like 50, right?
No.
And doing Expendables 4 or something, you know?
They're making that.
I assumed. I think he did, like, we saw him fight in Rebirth, and it was very good. He's also good at the acting part in this. Like, I was really impressed with his performance, and I was impressed with the fighting, and you said some shit about the fighting not being so good, but, like, the impression I got was that he was in those, in that first pitch, he was like, well, this is how, like, fights actually look.
Yeah, I didn't say the fighting was bad. I said they said it was bad.
Okay, fair. I don't want to put that on you, but he's like, I'm a trained martial artist. It's not going to be any problem for me to kick this guy's ass. It's not going to be super flashy because I don't need it to be. I'm going to kick this guy's ass. But then the studio execs being like, nah, man, we need to ramp up the action. This looks pretty bad. It's boring. And, like, you know, it's like a statement about how, like, I don't know, this shit was done like post-Matrix movies, post-Equilibrium, right?
Yeah, Johnny Cage's TV show needed 60 to 80% more gun kata than it currently had.
Yeah. But, like, the amped up, like, way, like, quick cut Taken era of movie making and shaky cam fights that we were talking about last time, and this was just like a fight filmed straight on and real martial arts, and they're like, nah, this is boring, nobody cares about this. That felt like a statement about, like, action movies and escalation and all that kind of stuff also, that I think is interesting, especially when we're talking about Mortal Kombat, which is all about, like, just cranking shit up till the knob breaks, you know?
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, so I liked that. And then I like when we see his second pitch. Like, the camera angles change. It's, like, more dramatic and low angles and all of that kind of stuff.
It's grittier, like, and sillier simultaneously.
Yeah, so I kind of liked the comparison of the two. I don't know, this one just as a whole really worked for me. The executives were, like, appropriately, like, sleazy and, like, money-minded and all of that kind of shit.
Yeah, no, this was just really good.
Sympathetic for Johnny.
It was just really good.
Johnny kicks the shit out of everybody, and you're kind of like, that's, like, good, they fucking deserve it, but, like, but what the fuck is he going to do now? His career's going to end. And then, boom, lights go out, and there's business.
Time literally stops. I want to make that the clearest I could possibly make it.
It does.
And also, he really viciously assaults that TV exec, throws him around, throws him through wardrobe, bloodies him pretty bad. Like,
yeah,
it is a malicious beatdown. It is punishable by law.
Yeah. Good thing Johnny Cage has a way out, though.
Yeah, because time stopped conveniently.
Yeah, he's got a friend who can freeze time, and he's going to take him to Outworld, I think, to fight on Outworld's side in the tournament.
What tournament? They haven't established a tournament yet.
Ooh, spoiler alert.
Never heard of it.
So I got one other thought. I was kind of tripping over this talking about Jack, Sonya, and Kano. It's probably been edited out by the time you're hearing this.
Oh my God.
So I want to talk about these two kind of as a whole, because they feel like, you know, these two segments kind of as a whole, because they feel very disconnected. But I think that they're doing a good job of doing something that is going to get built on more next episode, where the Jax, Sonya, and Kano episode started in a very, I mean, future tech aside, right? Started in a very sort of grounded place, just military cops busting up a crime ring, the crime ring, like, being an international terrorist organization and setting a trap for the cops. It's all very real stuff, right? Not like heightened fantasy elements or anything like that. But there's little seeds sown in, right? Things we know about, the cyber initiative, the robot eye, the hint to, like, Jax getting some arm enhancements and stuff like that. And you kind of buy it because they've introduced this idea of technology and robot. I'm just going to call them robot weapons. Robot weapons. But it's still this heightened thing beyond like our...
I believe the technical term is Robotech.
I only know it as Macross. Thank you, Superdimensional Fortress Macross.
Wait, are Robotech and Macross the same thing?
Yeah, we can talk about it later, but basically...
Wait, they're the same show?
Yes, so...
Wow.
Yes and no.
What the fuck?
Robotech is three different Japanese animated series all combined into one so that they could syndicate the show, sell the show into syndication.
So they just gibberish slammed together three unrelated television programs?
Yes, they did.
And then, like, what, tried to stitch it together through dubbing?
Dubbing and time jumps and stuff.
That's
like that.
That's fucking crazy.
It worked. They got 85 episodes. So it was Super Dimension Fortress Macross, Super Dimension Calvary Southern Cross, and Genesis Climber Maspeida were the three Japanese series that they sewed together and, like, wrote new, like, kind of ways to connect all of them to syndicate it into one. I mean, it was all mecha anime, and I think two of them even had the same, like, animation style. One of them was different.
Well, they both, two of them start with Super Dimension, so, like,
right,
probably that.
Yeah.
Shout out to so whatever the fuck all... Robotech Love Live Alive is. There's Robotech comic books coming out, like, right now, so I guess at some point they must have clarified what it means to be Robotech.
So there's two distinct universes, because the Macross series continued and everything, but over here, I forget the I can't pull the name of the distributor, but after they went through like the 85 episode storyline, they started to develop an American sequel, Robotech 2, The Sentinels.
Yeah.
That was going to be a new series, American produced, but that would look like...
There's a parody called Robotech 3, not necessarily The Sentinels.
They've done other stuff too, like they did, I mean, there were a ton of comics adaptations, and Robotech 2, The Sentinels ended up becoming a comic book series when the show didn't get made. But then they did like Shadow Chronicles, and they've done a bunch of stuff like... you know, Western produced stuff to continue Robotech, including like the comics and everything. You want to do a Robotech podcast sometime?
Kinda.
I'll do a Robotech podcast.
I would do that.
Let me get back to my point about Mortal Kombat.
Hold on, there's a book called Robotech Voltron.
Hell yeah. It's a crossover. I'd
Event Horizon Robotech? Hold on.
I don't think that's what you think it is.
No, Event Horizon must be like an event in the comic,
sure,
or something, because there's no way.
Anyway, back
to
Mortal Kombat Legacy. You distracted me with something shiny.
It's all it takes.
A little something called Robotech. I'll talk about that all day.
It stands for robot technology.
It stands for robot technology. Robot weapons. So I think, okay, so my point is, We start in this sort of grounded, realistic depiction of what's going on, but there's this extra element of these cybernetic weapons and cybernetic enhancements and stuff going on. Then we cross over into this Johnny Cage episode, which again feels very familiar. I mean, they're naming actual reality TV shows. They're talking about Power Rangers, all of that kind of stuff. And at the end of it, like the switch flips and everything goes dark and time freezes and Shang Tsung steps out. So there's these like subtle ways that they're working into these episodes. Well, subtle ways in the first one that they're working into it, that like, no, this is a kind of a different world. And in this one now, our first real taste of like, no, there's something else going on, something else that isn't based or grounded in reality as we know it. The short version is I think that they're doing a good job pacing. Like we're relating to the world because it feels real, but we're learning that there's other stuff going on. Like if you're just watching this series, they're introducing it in a way that I think makes it believable. And they're going to amp that up again next week, because next week is all about Edenia.
Do we go there?
We're going to see the story of Kitana and Melina next time, and it's going to be very familiar Mortal Kombat stuff. I think that having the Shang Tsung reveal at the end of this is preparing us for the stakes to get raised to where like it's, I think they're building a universe that still feels very realistic, but they're going to work all of these like fantasy elements and advanced tech elements and stuff into it in a way that it doesn't take you out of the world.
Right. Yeah.
That's how I feel. And I probably could have said that like a lot faster and smoother if we didn't talk about Robotech for 7 minutes.
Would it be MK PodQuest if we didn't?
Good point. But that's it. I think, I don't know. You got anything else you want to say? I want to browse my notes here real quick.
No, I just think this was, the Johnny Cage one's a really fun time.
Yeah, this was a good one. And it was an interesting, it was new. It was like, I mean, not that we've ever really seen like the Johnny Cage story in anything else, but even in like Legends.
This was a great interpretation of that.
It was a really good interpretation of it that still feels familiar, but also like sets it in our in, like current day at the time. And I think it took some chances too, honestly. Like that they wouldn't normally do.
Right.
That's my reading. Anyway.
I get it. Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm just, yeah.
That is it. That's it for the first three episodes of Mortal Kombat Legacy. What are you after seeing this Johnny Cage episode? Because I know from talking to you, you're a little bit like, after watching Jacksonian Kano parts 1 and 2, but you seem to be in a better spirit.
I am more intrigued now than I would have been if it was just another episode of that.
Yeah. So next episode, we've got Katana and Melina parts 1 and 2, and then a standalone episode called Raiden.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Sorry, I had to pause for a second here because I am so excited to hear what you have to say about the Raiden episode.
Why?
You'll see when you watch it,
you
man.
Can't
no
just
spoilers.
Set me up for that. Can you give me a hint?
Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy.
Can you give me
a hint? You would never in a million years guess what the Raiden episode ends up being. You have no idea.
Animated.
Like, I don't know how. Huh?
I said animated.
It's not animated.
Only Raiden is animated. The rest are real, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I do want to say that the Katana and Melina episode does involve some animation.
I might watch that Raiden episode today just because I don't think I can wait a week to find out what the fuck that is.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Don't do it, man. Hold on to
Why?
It. Why? All right, fine. You can watch it now. I cannot wait to hear what you think about it. I can't. I hope I'm not building this up too much.
You might
Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here so that you can go watch the Raiden episode of Mortal Kombat Legacy early.
Sneak preview.
What do you have to plug?
I have another podcast. It's called They Made Another One. It's with my friends Liam and Mitch. Well, actually, I don't have a lot to say about it because this week it's an MK Podquest episode.
Yeah. You guys want to go back and hear our thoughts on Journey Begins?
Yeah.
They Made Another One feed.
So this week we do not have a new episode out for various reasons, but we will have more coming soon. Sequels, reboots, remakes, movies. It's what we like to talk about over there. They Made Another on Twitter. TMAO on Letterboxd, which I have not updated since the Bronze Age. And I'm at Mr. Corey Price on Twitter, and you can listen to that over there.
You can find me on Twitter at Final Neil. Follow my retro gaming Instagram account at Final Neil Retro. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at MK Podquest. Subscribe in your podcast app. Rate us and review us 5 stars. Help us achieve our Christmas dreams by going to ko-fi.com/MKPodquest if you'd like to support the show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on fucking Facebook if you want. And you can find links to all of those things at our website, MKPodquest.com. And while you're there, maybe hop over to our Redbubble shop and buy a shirt. Corey, I am wearing the MK Podquest logo shirt right now.
How's it feel?
It feels good. It is a nice quality
shirt. I don't
shirt.
Own any of our merch yet, so I mean...
The printing is good. Some people have bought some stuff. I'm interested in hearing what they have to say about it all.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah. Yeah, you can do that thing. I can attest to the quality.
Logo's real big.
Yeah, and I think it looks good.
You can also get it on like stickers and sweaters and...
And that's it. Let's get out of here. Let's go try to sell a reality show where we... punch people in the streets to some sleazy TV execs up there in Vancouver. Sound like a good idea to you?
Rumble in the Bronx 2.